Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And this is going to be, I think, an extremely interesting show. What do you feel about reincarnation? Have you ever explored the concept? Have you had any unusual experiences of, let's say, some awareness of a time warp, if you will, of the past? Or perhaps there's been some other unusual experiences that you've had, maybe going to a certain country and feeling as if it just is a part of you. It's very comfortable. It's very easy. Called deja vu. Does that ring a bell with you? Well, we're going to have an interesting conversation, I believe, with a gentleman who is in Birmingham, England. His name is Roy Stemman, and he's a researcher. That's right. He researches paranormal subjects, and all paranormal means is that it's outside of what we consider a normal experience, and we're going to be learning about some wonderful research that he has done. His book is The Big Book of Reincarnation. Roy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna.
Now, you have done a lot of writing. You have a blog that can be found at your website, paranormalreview.com. I would imagine that this is something that really keeps you hopping, that because of what you do with research, there may be so many people that come up to you and or email you, blog you, whatever, saying, you know, I had this experience when I was 2 or 3 years of age, and it's never left me. Or I was on this trip, and I had XYZ experience. Or my mom told me about something that she experienced. Has this been pretty common for you? What got you interested in this? Did you have a big aha of your own?
Well, to answer the first question, it is quite common, but it's mostly anecdotal. So I love to hear these stories, but there's very little one can actually research or corroborate, because often it's people talking just about feelings or experiences that came and went very quickly. But my interest began way, way back in the when I was a teenager, and actually it began because I had an interest in UFOs at the time, and a newspaper called Psychic News happened to be on display at my local newsagent's. And the headline was about something to do with UFOs. And I bought a copy, and the newspaper fascinated me. It turned out to be a spiritualist weekly newspaper. And from then on, I began to look into the subject not only of UFOs, but also spiritual contact, spiritual communication. And I think what really got me hooked was that Air Chief Marshal Lord Dowding, who was the person that led the Battle of Britain in World War II, had written a couple of books, which I obtained from my local library, and he talked in that about his spirit, his seances and spirit communications from dead airmen and soldiers, and the messages he had passed on to their widows. And the evidence that he provided was substantial, and that got me totally hooked. And the fact that Dowding also expressed his opinion that UFOs were extraterrestrial craft made me even more impressed with him as an individual. So I began doing my own research, and I eventually ended up on that newspaper, Psychic News, as assistant editor, and I worked there for 8 years. And it became convinced very quickly through personal experience and sittings with mediums that we do survive death, that death mm-hmm. is not the end, and that we would go on into a future life. But what fascinated me was how many spiritualists differed on the subject of reincarnation. Not only spiritualists, but spirit guides as well. There are spirit guides. Yeah. There are spirit guides that teach reincarnation as being one of the most important aspects of our spiritual evolution. But there are other spirit guides that deny that it happens. And they say that all spiritual progress happens on another dimension, in spiritual realms. So who to believe? Which one to accept? So I decided the only way was to look for really, really good, hard evidence of reincarnation. And that took me into lots of reading and research and interviews with some of the top researchers in this field, and also on a couple of trips to the Lebanon in the Middle East, where I experienced with the Druze people their experiences of past life memories, which is absolutely fascinating. It was a peculiar way in, if you like, but it was a subject that hooked me from an early age, and I'm still as fascinated by it as I was as a teenager.
Your book, The Big Book of Reincarnation, really does such a good job of speaking in a layperson's language without a bunch of hoo-woo-woo-woo, and I think that that's very important. And I think of the experiences that I have had, and I know that being in the work of mind as I have been for so many years, I hear from different cultures, different environments, many different stories. And lots of times these memories are brought forth in the most interesting way. But I wanted to point out that you do, in the book, you go into how many different cultures, you know, in India it's very much accepted. Hinduism is centuries old, and it's been a part of that belief system. The Egyptians, Buddhism, Pythagorism, Orphism, you know, even in Christianity, there was this understanding until people decided, well, we're going to eliminate this, which isn't unusual historically. We always go through ups and downs of understanding, and people like to dictate what they think we should think and do, and it doesn't work out very well, but they do their best. Anyway, you go through a lot of this, and I was really intrigued with the story about Dorothy Eady, because this woman, I'm aware of her, and she is such an incredible story. Did you have a chance to meet Dorothy Eady?
I didn't, unfortunately. She had passed on by the time I got to read her story. It was published quite a few years ago. She was an English lady, and basically from an early age, she had memories of a life in Egypt, so much so that she took herself off to the British Museum and immersed herself in that era, spending time looking at all the artifacts that are on show there. And in particular, she began to really study it from a sort of an academic point of view. And she learned to read hieroglyphics and just had an enormously wide understanding of the Egyptian culture. And then she eventually took herself off to Egypt, where she settled down. She married an Egyptian, and they had a son who she named as Seti. And Seti was one of the most revered pharaohs of long ago, Seti I, that is. And the reason she named the son Seti was because she had become convinced that she was or had had an affair. I believe she was a handmaiden or she was a servant girl to Seti in that past life. And she had an affair with him and had a child became pregnant at least, and she wasn't allowed, that was frowned upon by the Egyptian hierarchy, and so she was eventually got rid of, as it were. But she came back, she wanted to spend time there, and in fact she spent the last years of her life as a guide to for any tourist that visited the Seti Palace in Egypt, and showed them around, and was a superb guide, because not only was she providing them with information that she had learned from her studies of Egyptology, but she was also sharing with them the memories that she still had of living with Seti in that temple environment. So it's a fascinating story. The book was called Om Seti, which was the Egyptian way of saying son of Seti. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, but just that's just one of a number of stories in the book relating to Egypt, because Egypt seems to have quite an influence over people's past life memories.
You talk about Joan Grant. Now, this
yes.
is a woman that also had a memory recall, and she wrote a book called The Winged Pharaoh. Mm-hmm. And she's another story. She passed away years ago, but she just had this way of bringing things to life, and she caused quite a furor with this book. When did that book come out?
That, from memory, was about the 1930s, if I remember rightly. And it came about in a very strange way, because she claimed to have an ability called far memory. And when the book was published, it was regarded as a novel. In fact, I think the publisher may have presented it as being a novel about mm-hmm. Egypt. But Joan Grant, it became a bestseller. And after that, Joan Grant said it was autobiographical. It was about a life that she could remember. And she had dictated the story to her then husband, her first husband, and he'd written it down. So it was almost like she was in a trance-like state and dictating it. And interestingly, that the parts of the book, the chapters, weren't dictated consecutively. They came out in different sections, if you like, and it was only later that they were able to put together the book by piecing bits that were dictated sometimes weeks or months apart, but they were found to run consecutively, and it all came together as a book. Most important from a research point of view, however, is that some of the things that she talked about, she called the experience of far memory changing level. She said her consciousness changed level, and she had access to the memories of those past lives. She had 200 sessions in which she dictated words daily in order for these books to be compiled. But a lot of the material in the books, the experts at first said some of the information was wrong. She couldn't be remembering a past life because it was inaccurate, so it was just a fantasy. But remarkably, quite a lot of that information subsequently was shown to be true. It was accurate, and archaeologists or scholars hadn't yet uncover the information that she mm-hmm. had acquired by far memory. So another fascinating woman. She wrote many books, but Winged Pharaoh was published in 1937. I just found it by looking up on the pages.
Okay.
But she published many other books as well about a whole string of lives that she claimed to remember.
Fascinating. Now, you had mentioned earlier, and for those of you just joining me, we're talking with Roy Stemman. He's in Birmingham, England. The book is The Big Book of Reincarnation. You had mentioned at the beginning of our chat that there were the Druze people, and for those of you listening, it's spelled D like Donna, R-U-Z-E, and you have a wonderful photo in your book about their spiritual leader, and you had visited a school, and correct me if I'm not pronouncing this right, in the Chof Mountains.
Yes, I think it's the Chuf Mountains, but my pronunciation may be wrong as well. I'm not too sure.
But there was a school for orphans that these people had, you know, for whatever reason, that came from poor families, or maybe they only had a single parent. And there were 900 children that attended the school, and 21 of these children, a little bit over 2%, claimed to remember past lives, and they were brought in. You had a chance to interview them. First of all, how did you learn about this group of people, and what was it like traveling to this remote area?
Well, I first learned about the Druze through a book written by Professor Ian Stevenson. Now, Stevenson was a psychiatrist who was based at the University of Virginia, and he was the world's foremost expert on reincarnation. He was supported, or the university was supported, by a grant from Chester Colson, who was the inventor of the Xerox process, who was very interested in the paranormal. And he knew that Stevenson's early research needed financial backing, because it involved traveling around the world to different places and reporting on cases, and which he did, in fact, for 30-odd years, and compiled almost 3,000 cases, many of them quite remarkable in the detail. Now, I've dedicated my book to the memory of Ian Stevenson, who I met on a number of occasions and interviewed. And he, one of the books he wrote related to the Druze families. Now, I think it was Lebanon. He wrote a book about Lebanon and Turkey, I believe. But in Lebanon, the Druze are a sect who are an offshoot of Islam, interestingly, because Islam does not teach reincarnation. But for the Druze, reincarnation is the cornerstone of their belief. And the Druze are to be found mostly in villages in the mountains or hills of the countries in which they live, and that is Lebanon, Syria, and Israel. However, you'll find Druze around the world, because they travel and settle down in other countries. But that's the core of their belief. They are quite a remarkable people, they not only believe in reincarnation, but I discovered when I went to Lebanon that it's almost impossible to find or talk to a family in which somebody doesn't have a memory of a past life. They all seem to have these memories as a matter of course. And the other interesting thing was that their belief is unlike the beliefs of Buddhism and Hinduism, in that they believe that when you die, you do not lose a breath. That the moment you take your dying breath in this life, you will take the first breath in a new life, in a newborn child coming out. Now, I have to say that I've not found any evidence to corroborate that in terms of the birth rate and the mortality rate, etc. But the spiritual leader that you mentioned that I spoke to and had a brief interview with, mm-hmm. Offered an explanation as to why those rates may not coincide, which was basically that sometimes they had a short life in between that was too short to have really any memories about, but I don't actually buy that. But that's their belief, and I mustn't be too critical of it. But the book does put the emphasis on actual reincarnation cases, and I have to say it includes some Druze cases that are quite remarkable, and these cases do not involve an instantaneous birth after death. Although there are some on record, I have to say, but the majority are not. I went to Lebanon, first of all to Beirut, on two separate visits. We were making a documentary film for a British television company, and the people are so welcoming and open. Although the Druze religion has always had a reputation of being very secretive. For example, they do have like a holy book, but it's not for everybody to read. It can only be read by those that are ministers or sheikhs, in fact, they're called within the church. I went there to meet children in particular that have past life memories, and that's how one of our trips was to a school, as you mentioned, that had children who were either orphans or from poor families. And in particular, we wanted to meet one little boy called Rabia. But in the course of talking to the people at the school, the headmistress happily agreed that we could, she would ask everybody in all the different classrooms how many had memories of a past life. And then she collected them all together, and they filled one of the classrooms. And we asked for a couple of them to give us their memories. Not that we had much time to follow up on them, I have to say. In one case, two of the children could remember being the same person. So this throws up questions about how good those memories are, or how accurate they are. But certainly in the case of Rabia, who we met, he was a quite remarkable little boy who could remember being a famous footballer called Saad Halawi. And it's a long story, but we eventually managed to bring his past life sister, who he'd never met in this life, to the school, and they met for the very first time. So that was filmed for the TV documentary. There are some fascinating and very evidential cases to be found amongst the Druze community, and Professor Stevenson reckoned that community could offer us perhaps some of the best evidence for reincarnation, just because the cases are so detailed.
You have a doctor, Abdel Abu Asi, and this is a man that actually has documented records of the children and the people that he's interacted with. And you ask some very interesting questions. You ask him if any of these people that he's interacted with, because he's very comfortable with this kind of telling of reincarnation, past life experiences, and you ask him, have any of these people ever experienced a violent death? And you said, he said it's not unusual, and he said it's a matter of fact, and the children usually remember their past lives more vividly than people who died naturally. On the other hand, they're often very difficult to handle, and that's why people come to me with these complaints. And he talked about a four-year-old boy that I think in the United States would be labeled with attention deficit disorder, and this child, nobody knew what to do with him because he was saying all kinds of words and names his parents didn't understand. He was trying to share his thoughts, and they were frustrated, and they thought it would be related to a past life. So he goes to Dr. Abdel Asi, and he asks him direct questions, and he doesn't talk down to the child. And the boy started telling him until he recognized what the boy was communicating, and he had died a violent death. He had been engaged to a girl, and the girl's father was against it, and very much against their getting married. And so he killed both of them. Mm-hmm. And here is this boy with these memories, and what he did to help him, they took him to the place where he said he was murdered, And after that, it was like, okay, and now there's closure. I found that extremely interesting. And the doctor said in these cases, when the kids are really creating so many challenges, the children, once they meet somebody from a past life, it seems to clear the distortion that they're still carrying. And I thought that this was an incredible observation on his part. As a physician, he has just got a very open-minded awareness, and I think these stories are fascinating, especially about the one patient, the girl, that knew him because he had treated her in the past. Tell her story.
Well, I should say the reason that Dr. Abu-Azi is so open-minded is that he is a Druze. He accepts reincarnation, so I guess he's more open to listening to these stories and understanding maybe even more than some of the parents the need to follow them up, not to to dismiss them. But the story of the little girl you're referring to was a child whose name was Dada, and she was 11 years old when she went with her parents in her past life on a picnic to one of the forests nearby, and during the picnic, she was shot accidentally by a hunter. Now, Dr. Abu-Azi had treated that girl in the past life, and she had died from this shotgun wound, and then she was reborn into a new family, and then one day, she wasn't very well, and she said to her mother, "I want to go and see the doctor." And her parents said to her, "But you're afraid of doctors. Last week we took you to a doctor and you screamed." And she replied, "This doctor, Dr. Azzi, whose name had been mentioned, I want to meet." So they took her to placate her, really. And when she entered this door, she said, "Dr. Azzi, I know you. You used to treat me for this." And she pointed at her throat. She added, "I used to have some sore throats, you remember?" Well, I'm sure the doctor sees lots of children with sore throats. So he said, "No, I don't remember. Just tell me who you are." And she said, "They call me," and he, because he's a doctor, he's not at liberty to divulge his patients' names, so he couldn't tell us her name. But she said, "I am really Dada." And so Dr. Abu-Azi went and fetched the medical records of Dada and put them in front of him, and he started asking her, this child, questions about the past life that she remembered. And he told me, "She even knew about her death, that she had been shot in the chest, and what her father had done to fetch her to the hospital. She said, 'The lady in white was sticking a needle in my arm, and I don't remember anymore.'" So Dr. Abu-Azi decided to ring Dada's parents, that is, the child that had died, her parents, and he asked them what exactly had happened when she died, and they said that the nurse had been putting an intravenous line into her arm in the emergency room, and then she just lost consciousness and didn't respond anymore. And he said to me, "That was something really unbelievable. This young lady still comes to me whenever she has any problems. She thinks that I am her super special doctor because I have treated her in two consecutive lives." So it's a fascinating story, I must say.
Well, it is. Now, we're going to take a break for a moment, and Roy has graciously consented to staying with us a little bit longer. When we come back, we're going to be sharing some more fascinating stories. This is Donna Siebel. I'm so delighted you've been able to join me today. And the topic is the Big Book of Reincarnation. When we come back, we'll be talking more with Roy Stemmen, who is in Birmingham, England. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hello and welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We are talking with Roy Stemmon in Birmingham, England. His book is The Big Book of Reincarnation. We've been listening to some fascinating stories. His book is absolutely wonderful to read. And the reason it is so pleasant to read is that there is no mystical woo-woo about this. He is very grounded in the way he communicates about the research that he's done. It's taken him to different parts of the world, interacting with different cultures. Roy, one of the stories that you share in your book is about a 4-year-old boy, Maung Pho Za, and I may be mispronouncing that, but he had a snake bite and he died. Now, what I found very interesting about this, because I've known people to have these experiences, with this death, a neighbor goes to the grieving parents saying that Maung had appeared to him in a dream, was trying to find his way home, but didn't know the way. And then the father had a dream about his son. The mother ends up becoming pregnant. And as soon as their child was born, they recognized that this was their son, but he had come back as a girl. Mm-hmm. Tell us how you got this information on this story.
This is one of Stevenson's story. What he found was Donna, I'm getting a lot of feedback on my line at the moment. I'm just going to see if I can adjust something.
All right.
Right.
While he's doing the adjustment, we're talking with Roy Stemmon, and his book is The Big Book of Reincarnation. Is everything okay, Roy?
That sounds better, yes. I was getting
wonderful.
An echo. Stevenson, as I mentioned, Professor Ian Stevenson, was the person that researched this. Now, what normally happened was that Stevenson, the case you mentioned was in Burma, if I remember rightly, and Stevenson went to Thailand, Burma, Turkey, and lots of other places, Lebanon that I've just mentioned, that he couldn't speak the language in a lot of those cases, so he always needed interpreters, but he found local researchers, often people who were parapsychologists or people that were particularly interested in either child psychology or the paranormal generally. And here we're talking, and I make it very clear in the book that there are two types of cases. One is spontaneous cases of reincarnation, which almost always involve children who remember a past life and start talking about it from the moment they can start speaking. And also there's many cases, of course, from people who, as adults, having no memories of a past life, are regressed, are hypnotized, and then a past life memory apparently comes to the surface. And I make it clear that I think we have to treat those two types of cases and judge them very differently. And the ones that, for me, provide the most evidence are the ones from spontaneous cases with children. Mm-hmm. And Stevenson himself argued that as well. But what Stevenson did as an academic, he not only collected these testimonies, but he also found a whole range of other elements to the stories that may also be relevant. And dreaming, as in this case that you mentioned, is in fact a dreaming of in advance of a child being born about who that child might be, is quite a common occurrence in particularly in some cultures, and there are also cases, as in this one, where a child is born remembering being a different sex in a past life, and he deals with that and also raises the question whether those individuals who say they feel they've been born into the wrong body are in fact remembering a past life or carrying over some emotions from that past life without actually realizing, you know, why they have those feelings. So it's his work was monumental, I have to say, and it's very much the inspiration for my book.
You go into talking about so many different cultures, and in Alaska, there's a number of Native American cultures there that you say this is very important. There was this one uncle, it was among the Tlingit people, I believe, and the man said, I'm going to be reborn. He told them how to recognize him when he came back because of two scars, and sure enough, there was a child born that had the exact marks on the body that he talked about. So you have these stories that have been documented. I was intrigued with the story about Joan Rivers. Now, Joan Rivers is known as a comedian and this bigger-than-life personality. However, it was a fascinating read to find out that she really went into what you mentioned a moment ago, hypnosis regression. And how were you able to find out about this information? Because she's a strong believer in reincarnation.
Well, Joan Rivers was actually regressed for a TV program in the States. And if I remember rightly, I'm trying to remember whether it was Brian Weiss. I'm not sure who the hypnotherapist was. But she agreed to go under hypnosis. And what I find most striking about her past life memories was that she could remember being an English woman. She describes herself as a gentrified English woman, so she's clearly changed from that mm-hmm. past life to her present life. But she said that she had three children in that past life, and I think she went back to the 18th century in her memory about this.
Yes, but 1835.
Right. Well, she suddenly said that looking in her past life memory at the three children she had, that she recognized one of them as her mother in this life, which was fascinating because there are quite a few cases on record, and I deal with this in the book, of people within families, and the case you just quoted amongst the Tlingit in North America were also cases that involve families and memories of being one's uncle or grandfather or grandmother or whatever. And it suggests maybe that if we reincarnate, we may come back in groups, either as a group soul or as individuals that just agree that we are closely related and we come back to continue living with each other, but in different relationships. So, you know, maybe we should look at our relatives with new eyes, new insights, maybe.
Yes, and sometimes I think people they choose to be born into an environment or a family so that they can grow and expand, and maybe they marry someone and find out that the members of their spouse's family are closer to them than anybody else, and there's a relationship there that's just absolutely phenomenal. And there are just so many variances on this. And many of the stories you have, no matter where it was in the world, the people seem to have often, not always, but often, they seem to have an affinity for a particular environment that they want to go into. Maybe they didn't finish what they were supposed to do. With all of this research that you have done, Roy, the understanding of quote-unquote karma that's often tossed around like popcorn. And so many people, dependent on what their cultural background is, they'll say, oh, well, there's no such thing. Others will say, no, if you've got to finish jobs that you came here to do. What is your positioning on this? With all of the research that you've done, if someone said, well, this is a person's karma to go through, how would you respond to that?
I always say that I don't think we are in a position to judge another person's karma. I think it's important to say that. I actually believe that karma is a law of the universe, if you like. I think we must be governed by some sort of spiritual laws that balance our good deeds and our bad deeds. But that's not to say if somebody is born with disabilities or other problems that they have been born that way as punishment for something they did in a past life. And that's the trap a lot of people fall into in talking about karma. We don't know whether that person may have chosen to come back with those disabilities as part of their learning experience. So we have to be very, very careful about making judgments. Having said that, I think it only makes sense if reincarnation happens, as I believe it does, that there has to be a rhyme and reason. There has to be a reason why we come back, and why we come back as a certain life or a certain culture, and what the lessons are that have to be learned. And the evidence points, and this comes from regression therapy more than from the spontaneous cases, but it points to the fact that in the interlife state between our past life and our present life, we would have had a period of assessing what we did in that past life and agreeing on what we would do in our next life. And then presumably we are directed towards being reborn in a place and at a time when those experiences we need can be given to us. So, I believe in karma totally. I just don't think any of us can make a judgment on other people's karma.
if you want to read a book that will mesmerize you, cause a lot more questions in your thinking than perhaps you could have imagined you would have surfaced, I would encourage you to consider getting the book, The Big Book of Reincarnation. Roy Stemman has been my guest. He's in Birmingham, England, and I'm very glad he graciously gave us some extra time here. His topic is a fascinating one, and it makes for some fascinating conversation. Roy, I'm so delighted you've been with me. His website is paranormalreview.com. You'll find out about his blog and other details. And Roy, I just wish you the best in everything that you do, and should you come out with more information or a new book, be sure you get in touch with me.
I certainly will, Donna, and thank you very much for inviting me on the show.
Oh, it's been a delight having you. Enjoy your summer day there in Birmingham, England. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now. Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Oh, it's just so many fascinating points of information, and I'm so delighted we were able to share it with you today. Now, by the way, the other day I had promised, and you can give me a call if you want at 888-627-6008, I had promised you that I would share a fabulous salad recipe, and perhaps you fix something similar like this. And I wasn't able to do it because we ran out of time. And this is the California Avocado Wild West Salad. And this is a recipe. It's so easy to do, but oh, is it ever good. And this is how it reads. You're going to need one medium onion. Now, if you don't like raw onion, that's fine, because I'm not big on raw onions. You can just eliminate it. You're going to need four fresh tomatoes, one head of lettuce, and you can substitute other lettuces if you prefer, whatever you like. You're going to need 1 cup of grated cheddar cheese. And if you're like me, you're always going to have extra. But 1 cup of grated cheddar cheese, and having the extra sharp is really yummy. 1/2 cup of French or Thousand Island dressing, hot sauce. I'd suggest having this on the side because people will have different heat levels that they like. You're going to need a 6-ounce bag of corn or tortilla chips. You're going to need 1 large avocado, 1 pound of ground beef, or if you prefer shredded beef, which is my preference, or you could even use chicken if you like. It's up to you. But the recipe itself originally says ground beef. 1 15-ounce can of drained kidney beans, and just a touch of salt. When I say a touch, I mean just a pinch. You really don't need very much. Now, this is how simple this is. And, oh, boy, do people love this. I have served it, and they just go, wow, this is so good. And this recipe, by the way, will serve about 6 people. But I'd say if people have hearty appetites, maybe 4, because it makes up a bunch. You want to chop your onions, if you're going to use the raw onions, tomatoes, and lettuce. Toss the mixture with a cup of grated cheese and dressing. Add, if you like, the hot sauce or just have it on the side. You want to crunch up your chips, and then you want to slice and edge your avocado. Your beef, now here's the stuff, you just mix it all together. Your beef you're going to brown, and then after your meat is browned, then you want to just use just a vague touch of salt, and you want to simmer the mixture of the meat for about 10 minutes. And then, just before serving, you put it on the salad. It is so good. I'm here to tell you. It is marvelous. And I like to serve it with additional salsa. Like I said, I typically don't put the hot sauce in because not everybody likes the heat that I do. So I don't add it to the meat or anything like that. I keep it to the side. But I've used chicken with this. You can use any of the various seasoned chips, corn chip or tortilla chips. There's just so many things that you can do with this. And kids like it too. So it's something, again, you can have fun with. It's quick and easy. Oh, does it look pretty when you serve it on the table? People just love it. And always have extra chips around. People like those chips and extra salsa because they'll be dipping away and even adding salsa to the salad if they like it. But I promised you that recipe. It's so easy, and I wanted to be able to give that to you. Now, by the way, I want to mention, for those of you in the state of Washington, or if you're coming from out of state, that's fine, I have free family passes for an upcoming event. It's the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. Now, this is in its 14th or 15th year, and I've been with them for about 12, and this event is awesome. Everybody's in costume. It's totally oriented towards the family, and I have free passes. So these are family passes. Each pass is for 2 adults and 2 children. So if you'd like to have one of these passes, won't you give me a call? Call me at 253-582-5604. I only have 9 left. I started off with 20, and they are going. So if you'd like to have a free pass, call me at my office, 253-582-5604. It's the first 3 weekends during the month of August. It is a fabulous, fabulous event. So we'd love to have you out there. And if you want to pass, I got it. So anyway, that is that. And, oh, it's held at Kelly Farms in Bonnie Lake, Washington. And again, it's absolutely marvelous. You go to the website, renaissancefair.com, or Washington's Fair, FAIRE.com, and you'll be able to find out all the information that you need to know. Now, quickly, I just want to share with you the lineup of guests that we have next week. We're going to be talking with a 13-year-old boy by the name of Dominic. This young man is incredible. He was diagnosed with celiac disease, and he decided he was going to learn how to cook gluten-free, and he has his own cookbook. That's right. So we're going to be sharing some of those recipes. And then on Tuesday, we're going to be talking with Vaughn Martin, who is a musher. His book is called A Long Way to Nome. He is an incredible man. He has an awesome story. This is a man that was inspired by Norman Vaughn, who was a guest on my show when he was in his 90s. This guy was on the first South Pole expedition, and Vaughn got to meet him before he passed away in 2005. This story is wonderful. And Norman Vaughn had started the Serum Run, and that's what we're going to be talking about. I didn't know anything about it, so this was an eye-opener for me. And then we're going to be talking on Wednesday with Asia Voigts. Her book is Pearls of Wisdom, and she has something else. But we're just going to have a delightful challenge, and she's an animal communicator. We're going to have the challenge of discussing 2 different modalities, and I think you'll enjoy it. And Stealing the Borders, Elliot Race, well, we're going to find out what those borders are. And then Scott Kennedy, on a week from today, is going to be my guest. We're going to be discussing seaweed. And the reason that this is so important is that seaweed has a capacity for supplying nutrients, the ocean. has the capacity of supplying nutrients that are beneficial for people, and seaweed has often been valued, but not necessarily in the way that he will be discussing. So we've got a great, diversified lineup of people that I hope you will enjoy listening to as much as I enjoy interviewing them. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is a phenomenal adventure. There's so much that we can learn, so much that we can come to know, and it's only by stepping outside the box that maybe we've put around ourselves to reach for something that's going to enlarge our world and our understanding. Can we really grow as people? And that's what life, I think, is all about. Exploring the unknown while staying grounded right where we are and appreciating the blessings that we have. Donna Sebo here. Have an absolutely magnificent day and a wonderful weekend. And we'll be talking with you same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.